once again, it's Alton Brown. This is the Alton Brown Cast. This is the third week in a row that I have had my podcast producer, Patty Catalano, here in the room with me just to help me deal with the big stack of questions that have come in regarding the holidays. Of course, Thanksgiving done, over. There's still, you know, now we've got to deal with Thanksgiving leftovers plus the pre-holiday cooking as people are already thinking about Christmas. Of course, Hanukkah started at the same time as Thanksgiving this year. So those things got kind of pushed together. So we just got, you know, Christmas and New Year flapping around out there. So Patty's with me. We're going to deal with as many of your questions as we possibly can during the podcast today. Of course, Black Friday is the, I guess, almost a new national holiday between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And we were doing a little looking at the history of Black Friday, since it's not actual. Oh, by the way, say hi, Patty.
Hey, how are you doing today? I'm Patty.
You asking me or are you asking them? Because they can't answer.
I know, but I like to pretend they can.
You like to?
They might. Like they might care. Be talking back to their MP3 device.
They might be talking back to their MP3 device, but if they are, they're crazy. And well, we like crazy.
Aren't we all?
Crazy. That's fine. We're all a little bit crazy. That's so fine. You were just telling me that, I mean, Black Friday is now, you know, that's in reference to going into the black, that this is that Black Friday is the day that many retailers in the United States, especially brick and mortar retailers, mm-hmm. will find out whether they're going to be in the red or the black for the year. It happens. It's the switchover happens today, and that everything between now and Christmas or whatever is profit or whatever. But that wasn't always the meaning of the word, was it?
It doesn't sound like it.
Well, what was?
Well, back in 2011, ABC News did an article on the darker origins of Black Friday.
You know, like Black Plague, that kind of thing?
No, not as exciting as that. Mm. Back in 1966, the Philadelphia Police Department really hated Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, because of all the traffic jams and shoplifters and everybody being out in the streets.
Everybody getting all cray-cray.
Right, exactly. And so they wanted to make the day seem as unappealing as possible. So they started calling it Black Friday. It's also turned up in a 1975 Associated Press article. And it was only after these two incidences that retailers started to try and turn that name around and put a more positive spin on
just
it.
Just like marketers.
Mm-hmm.
Just like marketers, and so they made it into the term that it is now. But I still think it's pretty nasty, personally. I do you go out? Do you Black Friday?
Only when my mother-in-law makes me.
Is she a big Black Fridayer?
She and my sister-in-law love it.
Where do they like to go line up?
They,
what kind of retailers are we talking about here?
Shoe shopping.
It's the shoes.
Yeah,
huh?
It's the shoes.
So it's not just the big box stores. I mean, other mm-mm. places do it too. So mm-hmm. they're knocking down the footwear.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what time do they line up? Are they out there getting?
They're not too crazy. They don't, unless they're looking for something big. I know my sister-in-law has gone and gotten a TV or whatever, but I will sit that one out if she's going on that one, but
I'm not going out. I can't,
if given
I don't
the choice,
like parking lots and I tend towards, I don't get road rage, but I will get some parking lot rage.
And I hate waiting in lines. I can't mm-hmm. I can't imagine waiting outside in a line outside a store and then waiting in lines, you know, to check out and to get help, and it's just too much of a free for all for me. I don't like it.
I don't like people that much.
Well,
and there
know,
are scary
know,
people
I know
out there.
That, but
they'll
maybe
like
you should...
they'll, what was it like last year? Somebody like maced somebody in the store to get a sweater.
People get trampled.
Yeah.
It's dangerous. You have to wear like riot gear if you're going to go out there.
Like a helmet, you need a football helmet and a mm-hmm. gas mask mm-hmm. and something that can deflect taser things. Little
because you know the security personnel are out there
and they're crazy too.
They're crazy.
Let's face it. Anyway, so my suggestion to you is to sit out Black Friday, stay at home and get some culinary stuff done.
Exactly.
Is what I say, because you've got a lot of leftovers hanging around from Thanksgiving mm-hmm. and you've got some Christmas stuff that you ought to get a jump on. So hopefully we'll have some questions right. about that today. And if we don't, we'll make them up so that we can answer what we want to answer rather than your actual questions.
That's right.
Not that we've ever done that before.
And for those of you who are out there, we might have something I don't know.
What were you going to say, Patty?
I was
looking at you with such expectation. It's like, well, what's she got? But you got nothing.
Well, we have some recipes we could share.
Well, we do have some recipes that we could share. And I like nothing better than to do dramatic readings of recipes.
I know.
It's a thrill.
I like it. I like it. I think it's
I'll try to do one like as Richard Burton or something.
I don't have as much practice in front of the microphone as you do.
Well, so you're getting it. You know, I mean,
you'll have to be patient
just,
with me.
This is our last one of these
for
a while. Unless you become so popular, which you could completely do.
I know. I'm going to take over.
And you'll be on all of them. You
want
to just take it over? Because I can walk out of here right now.
No.
I mean, it's not like we've got any advertisers to piss off or anything.
That's true.
We won't have any advertisers.
I know, but then we won't have
sponsors.
We won't have any listeners either.
I don't know. You could get like this whole cult following going.
I'm sure.
Could happen.
I'm sure. All right.
The Patty Catalano show. Or the Patty Catalano cast.
I'm not.
All right.
Okay.
So let's go with a question. Now, we're taking these. We get a lot of questions from Twitter. We get them from Facebook, especially this time of year. And email. Ask Alton at AltonBrown.com. You can send questions there day or night, 24 hours a day. But we only actually look at them on, like, Tuesdays.
Pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. That's when Sandy's in.
That's when Sandy's in. Yeah, and Sandy's the person that looks at all those. All right, go ahead. Hit me.
So let's take a step back and talk about leftovers. Thanksgiving leftovers. Because we know that half the people who are listening bought a turkey that was too big, and now they have pretty much an entire turkey
leftover. Too big? You mean just big enough? I mean, leftovers are half of why you buy a turkey, isn't it? Tell me the truth right now. What is better, turkey on Thanksgiving or the turkey sandwich the next day?
I will say the turkey sandwich the next day because
yeah, you will.
I am a side eater. I will take like one slice of turkey on the day of.
I sometimes don't have any turkey the day of. I'll have some of the skin.
Yeah.
And then I walk away and eat the sides, and the turkey's for later on down the road. There's my confession. All right, go ahead. What's the question?
All right. So Mary Martin wrote in and said, "Dear Alton, what is the proper length of time after Thanksgiving dinner for the turkey to stay in the refrigerator before discarding or freezing?"
Three hours?
Days,
my answer
years.
Is three. You know what? I think that cooked turkey, I mean, I'll be real honest. You know, here in America, I tend to think that we're a little overly conservative about refrigerator times on cooked food. I mean, I know what the guidelines say. The guidelines, let me guess, because I bet you've already got it open on your computer. It's 3 to 4 days, isn't it?
It is.
You know what I know? You want to know something? Last Thanksgiving, I tore all the rest because I'm big on, I want to get the carcass stripped down and I want to get that meat set aside. I kept that stuff in a bag for 3 weeks in the refrigerator and it was fine. It was fine. If cooked meat is going to go bad, it's not going to be because it's got salmonella or campylobacter or anything like that or E. coli. It's going to be because it grows fuzz.
It turns green.
And gets slimy and turns green. So if I open a Ziploc bag that's been in my refrigerator and I stick my head in there and smell it and it smells fine and I touch it and it doesn't feel slimy and I taste it and it tastes fine, guess what? I'm eating it. I will completely eat it.
Well, for all of you out there who cannot talk back to me, I am the food safety police here.
So you're the food safety police at Alton Brown Enterprise.
And what
Enterprise? My God, you make it sound like a rental car place. What? So you're going to stick by the 3 to 4 day?
I'll stick to the 3 to 4 day.
You're not even going to stretch that? Come on, man up.
Okay, I would. The longest I would go is maybe a week.
And then you would just throw it out.
And then I would either throw it out or I would stick it in the freezer.
All right, how long in the freezer? How long before? Because let's face it, we know good and well that you could keep that in there for a year.
Probably like 2 months.
But it would
be
nasty.
Yeah, probably 2 months. Honestly, it's unless I label it, it gets in that mystery meat pile in the freezer. And then when I need room for something new in the freezer, I throw it out. I know that's
terrible. So you're saying that basically your freezer is full of stuff you're going to throw away?
Pretty much.
I sometimes freeze things just so they won't smell when I throw them away. I will freeze things and then throw them away as part of the throwing away.
Yep.
Like a bunch of chicken guts. You put them in the trash can. If the trash isn't coming until next week, it's going to stink to high heaven. So I'll freeze it and then throw it away.
That was one of our strategies when we were filming your
aforementioned. That's right. We would do because one time, somebody threw away a whole fish. You remember that?
And the
fire department came to investigate. But we did have a hard time on Good Eats, especially in the summer, because it was food we couldn't give away.
Yeah.
And so we'd throw it away. And one of you guys thought that like an entire grouper or something that you guys threw out?
I think it was
out?
After the Japanese show when we had filled that whole
we had to fill
that
the
whole
cabinet.
Case, the whole grocery store case full of
some kind of weird fish.
Crazy stuff.
And then in about 2 days, the smell hit.
Yeah.
And it was bad. And it was for like 3 acres in every direction.
Mm-hmm.
The cops didn't come, but the fire department came.
Yeah.
And we
yeah.
had to like wash out that dumpster and yep. sanitize it.
Jim, my attorney. And your attorney.
My attorney had to put on like a hazmat suit.
Crawl in the dumpster.
And crawl in there.
And like bleach the dumpster.
And bleach it.
This is what happens
when you
TV.
Don't dispose it's, of your
it's
food
very
properly.
Glamorous. It's very glamorous.
The problem, of course, with frozen leftovers is the defrosting cycles that that modern freezers mm-hmm. go through tend to almost sometimes melt the food. Not really melt mm-hmm. it, but it's very hard to prevent buildup of ice damage and freezer burn and stuff like that. So you have to package the ever-living bejeebers out of stuff yeah. with Ziploc bags and foil and all of that. Mm-hmm. Unless you've got a deep freeze, which tends to do a better job, yeah. but most people don't have a deep freeze yeah. at home. So what, you're going to say half a year? On the frozen?
I will say two months on
the
frozen.
2 months on the frozen. Okay, so 3 months on the frozen. Got it. And three to four days
and
fresh.
Alton will say...
And what if you cook it? What if you take those leftovers and you cook them into something else?
Like if I make a turkey soup, for example.
Let's talk about that.
Let's talk about turkey
Fine.
Soup. I would use the cooked turkey... Make the turkey soup the next day so that it's not old turkey going into
instead of going shoe shopping with your mother.
Exactly. And then I would freeze that soup for a couple of months. Because by the time you go past a couple of months, you're in the spring and summertime and you don't want soup anyway.
Well, I hadn't thought about that. You're right. But if I was going to freeze soup, I would do it in portions. I would do it in smaller portions so I don't have to thaw it all.
Of course.
Do you have a soup? Do you have a soup that you make?
I enjoy the bird to the last drop soup.
Well, that was the one that we did on yes. Good Eats on the remains of the day.
There's also...
Why do you like that one?
It's a classic. But there's also it's more of a springtime soup.
But you just said nobody wants soup in spring.
I know.
You just said it. What the hell?
Well, sometimes it gets a little chilly in the spring.
Sometimes.
I'm backtracking.
You are.
I'm backtracking.
You're seriously
now.
Backtracking.
All right.
So all of your authority has just been completely cashed in for being glib.
Ugh.
All right. So let's talk through Bird to the Last
yeah,
Drop.
Let's talk through Bird to the
Last
Drop.
Because this was actually not an easy soup to develop because most of us felt that when we worked on it, that it was just bland and it just kind of lied there, you know, lay there. But then we think that we got this one down, but we've made it reasonable. Okay. Made it reasonable. So, you take your carcass. Now here's the thing. You're never going to get the exact amount of flavor and depth and gelatin out of a cooked carcass as you would a raw carcass. Okay. Which is why during the year, whenever I bone a chicken, I always freeze and keep the carcasses of the raw ones so that I can, you know, put them all together and make pots of stock. And you may do that. And in which case, you know, and you can certainly freeze chicken or turkey stock for longer than
yes.
6 months.
Yes.
I've kept that for up to a year. But we're going to assume that you're starting with a cooked carcass that you have picked all the meat off of, or a reasonable amount. I mean, nobody's going to sit there and, well, I mean, I guess some people would pick every last morsel. I don't.
Yeah.
I just take what's reasonable and what I know is either going to go. Because I save some for sandwiches and I make salad with some. I make like a, you know, turkey salad.
Like a chicken salad?
Yeah,
sort
but
of
with,
thing?
With turkey.
Right.
That's out of the little nastier bits,
yeah.
you know, but the nice slices you keep for people that want
sandwiches.
That. And then I make, yeah. And we can talk about that too if you want to. Anyway, so we're assuming that you've got no, you know, raw turkey stuff around. So you're going to take your carcass, whatever is left, and you can throw in, if you saved the neck, if you had it
mm-hmm.
From the turkey, you can put that into a big pot. And this is going to be at least... Well, I usually do in a pressure cooker bottom. So we're talking anywhere from 8 to 12 quarts. 8, I would really kind of call minimum. You're going to need 2 quarts of a broth or stock. Now, we've decided to build this one on vegetable broth because vegetables are very forward in this particular recipe. If you've got turkey stock, if you've got chicken stock, use that. And by all means, use the homemade stuff. But if you're going to use store-bought, we like to go with a vegetable broth on this. So you're going to have 2 quarts of that you're going to pour over the carcass, and you're going to bring that just up to a simmer. It's probably going to take I don't know, probably 20 minutes to bring that to a simmer. Cover, cook gently for 1 hour. And then you're going to fish out the carcass, okay? And hopefully it wasn't in a whole bunch of pieces because, you know, that can be a pain. I would use like my spider strainer for that. Then here's what you're going to do. You're going to add a 10-ounce box. That's right, a box of frozen vegetable medley, which... I never actually serve as a food. I only use as an ingredient in other things. But in this case, this is designed to be made the day after Thanksgiving, which is the day I least want to cook ever. Mm-hmm. I just am burned out. I don't want to do it. I don't want to think about it. So I keep this stuff around. A 10-ounce box of the frozen veg med. And that's usually it's got carrots. It's usually got some kind of pea or lima bean in it. Sometimes it's got corn in it. Yep. What else do you get in the veg med there?
Sometimes it has little pieces of diced onion.
Yeah.
It really depends.
There's always carrot, though, because they need the color.
Yes.
But whatever you've got, you just need one box of that. So you're going to add that. After you take out the carcass, you're going to add that to the broth along with some uncooked rice, half a cup of long grain. Don't use short grain, medium grain, arborio, or anything like that. Just a long grain white rice, like a basmati or a jasmine rice would be fine. Uncooked goes right into that. Then you're going to add 2 cups of leftover turkey meat. And it needs to be torn up or cubed into small pieces. It doesn't need to be nice, big, fancy cuts or anything. It doesn't matter. It's all going to fall apart once it's in there anyway. I usually use some kind of either poultry seasoning or, frankly, I prefer Old Bay. And, you know, it's funny. Old Bay is... I'm trying to think of what even is in Old Bay anymore. It's got red pepper, right? Red pepper and black pepper. And I think there's sage in Old Bay. And I don't remember if there's garlic powder. It's been so long since I've looked that stuff up.
I know, but you... In a lot of the early recipes, you
a lot
used
of early good
it.
Eat stuff. Yep. I like it. I
mean,
it's a good mixture. I want to say
celery salt.
Celery salt, okay.
They're
dicey on.
They are dicey
what they got
about it. It only says spices. Red pepper, black pepper, and paprika, and celery salt. That's all they'll tell you.
That's it, huh? Well, there's other stuff in there.
Mm-hmm. Magic.
Okay. Well, if you don't want to use that, you can make up something. But it's the celery salt that I'm mostly after there. And then I like to add thyme. Thyme is a great herb for turkey, especially when you're marrying it to vegetables. So I use a couple of teaspoons of dried thyme. I wouldn't use fresh thyme because... it's a pain to get off those little stems. That's just the way I figure it. Anyway, so once you've got that in, you let it simmer for about another 20 minutes. Then just season, taste, and season with salt. And don't pepper it. Pepper it at the table. This is absolutely key. You want to give it fresh ground black pepper right there at the table. And it takes a lot. And I don't know exactly why that is. I've never figured out why pepper has such a great affinity for turkey, but it really does. And I usually give it at least 4 or 5 big grinds. And occasionally I'll hit it with a little bit of lemon juice just to up the acidity a hair. Mm-hmm. And that's bird to the last drop.
Love it. And you also add a lot of black pepper to your chicken and dumplings.
You know, I do. Now, if you don't like rice, you don't have to use rice. You could put pasta in there. Mm-hmm. You could use like a...
What do you think about doing a wild rice?
It would throw off the recipe because that takes a lot longer to cook and it absorbs...
more.
At different rates. Okay. I don't know if it's more. You could use brown rice though, but you're still going to throw off the cooking time.
It would throw off the cooking time, especially with a brown rice.
Orzo. Mm-hmm. Orzo would be nice.
Orzo would be really nice
if you're going to do a pasta. Anyway, that's that's a perfectly perfectly good soup.
So, what else do you do with turkey? You talked about a turkey salad.
I make turkey salad, but you know what I like? I chop up turkey with some celery. I fold it in with some mayonnaise and some of my leftover cranberry sauce. And I mix that all up, and that's good. I like the sharpness of the cranberry sauce up against the turkey with just the little mayo to bind and a little crunch from the celery.
Yeah.
It's super simple.
Yeah. It has to be because, like you were saying, that next day you don't want to do anything.
Well, the nice thing about that is that if you don't like sandwiches, a lot of people won't eat a sandwich the day after Thanksgiving because they're already feeling guilty for the fact that they ate like pigs on Thanksgiving. Yeah. So you can literally just put down a little bed of lettuce on a plate and scoop some of that onto it, you know, and people eat it with like a saltine cracker or something.
Or a leftover roll because maybe that's smaller.
What's a leftover roll? their rolls sometimes left over?
I have heard.
You've heard tell
I've that heard sometimes tell people of will leftover make leftover rolls.
I've never seen one. No. Never seen a roll that's left over.
It's like an enigma.
And if I did, I'd make bread pudding out of it.
Mm, yeah, bread pudding.
I don't know. Well, what would you? You would serve it. You would take the leftover rolls and make like little sliders
like
with
little
the
sliders
turkey.
With it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Anyway, I like that better than just sliced, you know, turkey sandwiches.
Yeah.
But some people really dig that. But if you're going to do that, you have to have iceberg lettuce. No other lettuce is acceptable, to my mind,
for turkey sandwiches.
I don't know why. Is that just because we grew up with that?
I don't know. You need the crunch. And I feel like it's adds some moisture to it.
Because
a lot of the
dry.
Times, unless you use, you know.
Our turkey
recipes. Yeah.
And I like that on sourdough recipes. Bread. And again, a lot of black pepper.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
Yep.
All right. Was that our only question? We had like one question for this whole time.
That's pretty much.
That was it. Okay. Well, thank you, America.
Thanks. So let's start talking about Black Friday.
All right. What about it? We've established that we don't know much about it.
Yeah.
Because we don't go out.
And I think it's not necessarily a day that people think about needing to prep food for because they're so sick of cooking on Thanksgiving. So
well,
the next day they don't want to.
Don't most people go out like really early?
Yeah, but we have some really great ideas. Like our overnight oatmeal. That's something really easy that you can throw together the night before.
It's actually good for you.
It's really good for you.
And it sticks to the ribs, as they used to say.
Right.
Well, that's it. I mean, I've got that one memorized. I mean, because it's so easy. But you got to have a slow cooker. You have to have a crock pot.
I think hopefully people do because they used it on Thanksgiving to keep things warm because they don't have 18 ovens.
We didn't tell them to do that, but we should have.
Oh,
did we mention that during the show?
I don't know.
Oh, well, keep your stock potter. The other thing that we like crock pots for is things like hot toddy and stuff like that. Around Christmas time, you make your hot toddy in the crock pot, so it's always
warm.
Hot and warm. So, yeah, okay, so it's overnight oatmeal. And if you're a devout fan of Good Eats, you've probably already committed this to memory. It requires that you possess steel-cut oats, also referred to as pinhead oats or Scottish oats. This is a form of oatmeal where the entire groat, the entire kernel, has been simply cut up into pieces rather than steamed and then rolled. So it's not a flake style oatmeal. It is a more hearty piece of oatmeal, and it has a lot more, I think, actual oatmeal flavor. Now, I like all kinds of oatmeal, but this one I think is a little superior. Mm-hmm. So a cup of that oatmeal and what's the one that's so popular that comes in the tin?
McCann's, I think. Irish oatmeal.
Irish oats. Okay, well, I said Scottish, but Irish also. They're the same. I don't think there's a difference between Scottish oatmeal and Irish oatmeal. Although,
I mean,
the
there's
Scots
a difference
have a,
between
have a,
Scotland and Ireland, but
there is. Thank you. There's a difference between Scotland
well,
and Ireland.
I don't want
you're right.
I have to go through all the emails, so
you're right.
I don't want you know.
No, you're right. You're right. men in Ireland rarely wear skirts.
This is true.
And they don't make scotch in Ireland. They do make Irish whiskey, but they don't make scotch.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's different. And
it
I didn't actually
different.
Say skirts. I meant kilts, of course. but I think that the oatmeals are the same. And, of course, do you remember the name of the stick that the Scots have for stirring their oatmeal?
I do
not. It's a spurtle.
A spurtle.
Yeah. You got to have a spurtle.
Nice.
It's like a special oatmeal stick.
Do you have one?
I have a spurtle, yeah. I have a spurtle that I actually got in Scotland.
I feel like you might be lying.
Just because I have one doesn't mean I actually know where it is. I'm not lying. I have a spurtle, but I don't actually know where my spurtle is. I've lost my spurtle.
I'll believe it when I see it.
My spurtle is MIA. So anyway, a cup of steel-cut oats. They can be Scottish in origin or Irish in origin. Combine that in the slow cooker with a cup of dried cranberries. Because, again, we're keeping with the season. Mm-hmm. And dried cranberries you used to not see very much. Now, can these be the sweetened ones, or do they have to be like the ones that don't have anything added to them?
That's pretty much what's available.
Pretty much.
Though,
if it says dry, if it looks like a raisin, but it's actually a cranberry, use it.
I'm a huge dried cherry fan these days.
Could you use dried cherries in there instead?
I don't see why not.
I don't either.
I feel like they've got a better flavor. But you're right, the cranberries
go with
the season.
Well, you know what, if you wanted to, you could use half a cup of dried cranberries and half a cup of dried cherries and then half a cup of dried figs.
Mm, yum.
And you know what? I've never specified whether those needed to be chopped up or not. Yeah, I'd chop them up. You know, you could use them whole depending on the size, but I wouldn't. I would chop them up. You're going to pour in a quart of water and half a cup of heavy cream and a big old pinch of kosher salt. Because, of course, oats without salt tastes disgusting.
Like wallpaper paste.
Wallpaper paste, exactly. So you just combine everything and set your slow cooker to low and let it cook overnight, 8 to 9 hours. So if you do that around, you know, bedtime, mm-hmm. well, it depends on when you're getting up for Black Friday, because it's got to be a solid 9 hours.
Yeah.
Well, 8. It'll get by on 8. So you might have to correct the seasoning with some salt, and that's it. So you know what you could do is you could literally just, if you've got a crock pot or a slow cooker that has the insert, the actual crock mm-hmm. insert, you could just pull that up, wrap it in a towel, take it in the car.
That's what I would do.
And then just eat that once you're in line there at whichever box store you're going to be getting a TV from yeah. and getting Oof. Maced in and all of that.
Exactly. Exactly. Don't forget your thermos of coffee.
Don't forget your thermos of coffee, and don't forget your pepper gun.
Pepper spray gun.
Your pepper spray gun for self-defense.
And what
and charge
is
your taser.
What is your favorite method of making coffee these days?
I'm going to tell you the truth. I've gone back to the French press.
Yeah.
I've gone back to the French press because I've decided, and there are a lot of people that yeah. are going to turn this off right now when they hear it. I've gotten to where, you know, I sat down with the Erds mm-hmm. From the Spice House, and they brought me some samples of some new cinnamon that they were dealing with, mm-hmm. cassia specifically. And they turned me on to a new Saigon cassia. It's an Indonesian. It's an Indonesian cassia. And I have to admit that I've been putting it in my coffee when I mm-hmm. brew my coffee. I've never liked cinnamon sprinkled on top of coffee.
Yeah,
so when I grind, I grind like, you know, half a cup of grounds to put in my French press, I'll put like
a big old spoonful.
Well, no, like less than half a teaspoon, but I'll put it directly in the grounds and then steep my coffee for 4 minutes. And when I do it, what I like to do is I add boiling water. I only add about half a cup of boiling water mm-hmm. and I slosh the grounds around and I let it sit for a couple of minutes. And then I top it off with boiling water and let that sit for 4 minutes before I plunge it. But you know what? I get that nice little, I have a cup of it right here. I'm drinking it right now. I get a nice little hint of cinnamon.
That's nice.
With the coffee. And I got to tell you, I know that makes me a coffee wimp. That's okay. I can live with it.
That's okay. You don't need to prove anything to anybody.
So as far as, well, I do. I probably have a lot to prove to a lot of people. But that, you know, and then I always store coffee in a thermos mm-hmm. because I like thermoses and I hate that taste, that flavor you get from leaving a pot of coffee on the warming burner.
Burned.
It gets that bitter, that extra bitter thing. And it's funny. The older I get, the more sensitive I am about that bitter flavor. So right into the thermos and take it with you.
Yeah.
And sell it to people standing in line along with the oatmeal. You can make a lot of money. To pay for your TV.
Brilliant.
You sell 5 or 6 cups of coffee and a couple of bowls of oatmeal, you've got that new TV because they're selling it for $30.
Exactly. Because nobody else has come prepared. And so they're all hungry and thirsty
why they don't.
And under-caffeinated.
Why does no one ever come prepared to these things?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Anyway, that's the overnight oatmeal, and it's never let me down. And that's one that we've actually, over the years, because that's from quite a while back on Good Eats.
A long time ago.
I've never changed that recipe one bit. And people seem to have, no one has emailed me and said, this didn't work. It's good. Yeah, it's generally pretty good.
Awesome.
All right. Are there any more questions? I hope. We're going to have a very short show.
I think let's move on to Christmas.
You want to move on to Christmas?
Yeah, because Christmas is my favorite holiday.
All right, Christmas.
Jana Cook wrote in and asked, is there a rule of thumb for which cookie doughs and whether or not uncooked or cooked can be frozen in advance?
I don't like frozen cookies unless it's Girl Scout cookies. I'll freeze any cookie dough. Whether it's a drop dough mm-hmm. or a cut sugar dough, you know, that you roll into a log, mm-hmm. you can actually, you know, well, I don't know. Would you roll it into a log and freeze it or roll into a log and then slice it into cookies and freeze it? Because that's what I would do.
A slice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would do too. Here's a trick. I don't know that this is food safe, but I'm going to say it anyway because I do it. If I'm making like a sugar cookie or a mm-hmm. pinwheel cookie or anything like that, that I'm going to make in about a 2 to 2.5 inch round. Okay. Yep. I'll roll my cookies. I'll cut my cookies. And then I will literally take a kind of long strip of parchment paper and I'll lay one cookie down, flip it over mm-hmm. so that now there's parchment on top.
Yep.
Put another cookie, flip it over and keep doing this until I've got a big column of cookie dough. And then I put it in a tennis ball can.
Okay.
And freeze them. So you've got this cylinder. You could also use you could use a Pringles potato chip can, but I think a tennis ball can.
I'm not opposed to that.
I mean, it's not food grade, but it's not like it's going to leach into it. It's not like I'm cooking it in there.
Yeah, and if you were really nervous about it, you could wrap that stack in plastic wrap.
Yeah.
I don't see why not.
I just don't.
Yeah.
Because I like the idea of using a tennis
ball
can.
So if you get a slice and bake cookie in the mail from Alton
Brown.
For me,
it's been in a tennis ball can.
It's been in a tennis ball can, and you've been forewarned.
Yep. So. And whatever happens to be in there is something that you're going to get. Now, drop cookies. I don't know about you. I always use a disher,
yep.
You know, which is technically the spring-loaded
like a
scooper.
Lunch lady scoop.
Lunch lady scoop. But they're actually called dishers. Mm-hmm. And
do they come in different sizes?
Well, of course they do. You know they do. But it used to be that you could tell the size. The sizes were standardized based on the number on the little dasher, the little arm that sweeps around has a number on it.
Okay.
And it used to be in the good old days, like up until the 90s, that that number was however many it took to make a quart.
Oh, okay.
So if it said 20, you knew that 20 of those made a quart. Then somebody started messing around with the system and changed the numbers till I don't know what they mean anymore.
No,
I haven't been able to figure it out. Yeah. So, but they come in a lot of different sizes. I'm looking for, I mean, I don't know, what's an ideal chocolate chip cookie size? Are we talking 2 ounces?
I do more like.
I mean, we're all holding up our
hands.
We're
holding
here.
Up our.
So what, an inch and a half in diameter?
I think an inch and a half because I was making cookies last night to go with this method.
Well, that's because you're nesting because you're getting ready to have a baby.
Yeah. So, of course, obviously you need chocolate chip cookie dough in the freezer.
And bourbon.
Yes.
For after you
have
the baby.
For after I have the baby.
So inch and a half is like like that? Or
yeah. I think an inch and a half. An inch is too small and 2 inches is too big.
Yeah. Okay.
So an inch and a half.
Now, that's just the diameter of the opening of the disher.
Yes.
So that's probably an ounce and a half.
Probably.
That's what I'm thinking. So I'll scoop them out onto parchment lined sheet pan and then shove that directly into the freezer, freeze it, and then move them to Ziploc bags.
Yep.
So that you've got
once they're
this
hard,
big
so they
bag.
Don't.
And then you know what you do? What? You eat them.
Yep.
You just eat them.
You do.
You get them out of the bag late at night and eat them frozen.
While your wife, in your case, or husband, in my case, is sleeping.
Yes.
And if you're nervous, because I am the food safety police here. You can use pasteurized eggs.
I don't care. See, I don't care if I get... I have never... Have you ever gotten sick off of raw eggs?
I have not.
I haven't either.
I have not, but I feel an obligation to say that
to
the world.
If you have an immune system that has been somehow...
Compromised.
You'll want to use pasteurized eggs. We are lucky we get eggs from a person that owns chickens.
Mm-hmm.
So we just don't worry about it that much. Yeah. And I will so eat the raw cookie dough. But you could also cook those cookies.
Yeah.
In which case you could actually put them on the sheet pans frozen and put into the hot oven and bake them. There's no real reason to thaw them, I don't think.
None.
So that's what you can do about cookies. And it's a good time to do that because you need a lot of cookies during the Christmas season. Yep. And I would say the same thing if you've got a great recipe for cheese balls or any kind of scoopable, bakeable type device.
Yeah.
They're fun.
Yep.
Just make sure you put them in something airtight because the fatter the cookie, the more it'll pick up funky flavors in the freezer.
And
all right, let's move on.
All right.
Another question. Hit me.
So Tim Hutchison and Jeffrey Price both wrote in about fruitcake. Tim asks, do you have any tips on how to make an edible fruitcake? And Jeffrey wants to know, is the expression good fruitcake always an oxymoron?
Oh, you want to know what I freeze?
I would love to know.
I freeze in mass quantities. And here's one that you can cook and then freeze.
Okay.
Many cookies you can't. But I make, in our family, we make these cheese ball things that you can freeze them in their cooked state.
Okay.
And it's the standard sausage balls. I think the recipe's on the back of like the Bisquick box. It's the only time of year I buy Bisquick because I have not been able to figure out how to formulate Bisquick on my own. There's something about a modified starch they use
in there.
That prevents me from being able to perfectly replicate it at home.
Yeah. I call these belly bombs. So, but go
belly
ahead.
Bombs, why?
I don't want to share that on international podcast.
What do they do to your belly?
They just can upset your belly if you eat too many of them.
What's too many?
More than three.
I never eat less than like 6 of them. Maybe you're making them very, very big.
Maybe.
But this, I mean, especially in the South. Now, did you eat these in that Yankified Connecticut place you grew up?
Only started eating them at tailgates.
Down here in the South.
Yeah,
because you guys don't tailgate up there because you'd freeze to death and be
exactly.
like a Donner party. So you got to buy Bisquick for this because there's something about the modified starches, the industrial product that is Bisquick that requires that. 3 cups of Bisquick, and you're going to mix that with, and this is always a weird amount. But if you mess with it, it won't work. And this has been handed down and altered a bit by my mother-in-law. 2/3 of a cup mm-hmm. plus 1/4 cup of milk. Now you're smart. Add up your fractions.
It is 11/12 of a cup.
And that doesn't reduce down, does it?
No.
Well, why can't we just say a cup? Is 11/12 that different from
this? This is my. You should ask your mother-in-law. Maybe she has good reason.
11/12. What's the difference between 11? I mean, if you break that down into ounces, if you were to break that, that's like a teaspoon. Then anyway, then you just stir in 1/2 pound of hot sausage, and the hotter the better. Break it all up. 10 ounces of sharp cheddar cheese, like a New York cheddar, and you shred that. All right, you run that through a grater, and you shred it up pretty fine. You mix this stuff up, and then you bake it, and you make up balls, like a little 1.5 ounce balls or 2 ounce balls, and then you bake it 375 for 15 minutes, and that makes these they're delicious in a disgusting way. I very often make them even hotter by adding 1/2 to 1 full teaspoon of cayenne pepper to them to make them especially hot, because I like them to have real kick. And I serve those all during the Christmas season, usually at just room temperature. And those freeze very, very well when you bake them first. Fruitcake.
All right.
I promise you that in my free range fruitcake, which by the way has been used as a secret ingredient on Iron Chef America, not once, but twice. Thank you very much. And Morimoto makes sushi out of it. He makes a roll. He makes a maki where the outer portion of it is fruitcake. I just want to say. So, you know, a few years ago, we undertook to come up with a really good fruitcake that was even a reasonably healthy fruitcake. And we went back and looked at the tradition of fruitcakes, even coming out of the Crusades, where were these kind of little compact cakes packed full of fruits and nuts were like really the original power bars. And then, these spices that came from the Far East were added also during the Crusades, because kind of the Middle East was kind of the melting point for all that. And we found that looking through both the Italian and the Spanish traditions, we could come up with something that was pretty amazing, or we think is pretty amazing. We call the free range fruitcake, because it does not use candied fruit. It uses dried fruit and other ingredients that are relatively healthy for you. And the way this recipe is laid out, there are a lot of ingredients, but I'm going to tell it to you in a way that everything's going to make sense. And it basically involves one step. Step one is maceration. And then there's the batter constructing, and then there's the baking. So here's the way you're going to do this. And it's interesting that this recipe starts with the one ingredient that I've said is always optional, but in this case, it really isn't, okay? There are 10 ingredients that you are going to put into kind of like a big plastic storage container, and that is 4.5 ounces of golden raisins, 4 ounces of currants, 2.5 ounces dried cranberries, 2.5 ounces of dried blueberries, 2.5 ounces of dried cherries, 4 ounces of dried apricots that have been chopped, and the zest chopped of 1 lemon, 1 orange, also 1.5 ounces of candied ginger, which is also sometimes sold as crystallized ginger. And you are also going to add to that 8 ounces of golden rum. Now, those ingredients need to sit overnight at room temperature. Do not make the mistake of doing this in the refrigerator. For some reason, the flavors just don't meld as well. And let's face it, everything's dry. There's plenty of booze. It doesn't need to go into the refrigerator. So that goes in overnight. And I want to see that be at least 8 to 10 hours. All right. Now the next day, get out either a spice mill if you have one, or if you have a small blade style coffee grinder. I've got one that I actually use just for spices. I don't even grind coffee in it. But you're going to grind together 4 cloves, whole cloves, 6 allspice berries. Now, you can get these in packages usually around the holidays. At some grocery stores, you can get them year-round. And allspice looks a lot like a black peppercorn, but a good bit larger and smoother on the outside. You're going to need 6 of those. And you're also going to need 1/2 of a standard cinnamon stick, which, as we all know, isn't actually cinnamon. It's cashew, but that's another show. You're going to just buzz those things up until they're a very, very fine powder, okay? Now, you're going to put those spices along with the macerated fruit and the liquid, okay, all that leftover rum, into a big saucepan. Then you're going to add 8 ounces of sugar to that, all right? 5 ounces of butter, and you know I mean unsalted when I say that. 1 cup of unfiltered apple juice. Okay. They call that cider in some parts of the country. And then also 1 teaspoon of ground ginger. That didn't get included with the other spices there because, of course, it's already ground. It doesn't need to be ground. So that is all going to go into this pot. You're going to bring that to a boil. All right. Over medium high heat. So nothing sticks to the bottom and burns. You're going to stir it often. When it comes to a boil, reduce that heat and let it simmer for 10 minutes. That's going to soften the fruit. Of course, that's going to make sure that everything's melted and everything comes together into kind of this proto batter. Take that off of the heat and let it cool down for at least 15 minutes. At this point, you could simply cover it and store it. Okay, and I have made this up to a week ahead, although technically I don't think we're supposed to say more in about 2 days. But let's face it, with that much booze in it, nothing's going to happen to it, especially if it's in the refrigerator, because everything else happens really quickly after this point. So if you're on a real schedule for the holidays, you know, you could hold off on that. My argument would be, though, that you want to go ahead and get your fruitcakes made because you need to saturate them very slowly with hooch leading up to service time. So let's say that you're going to go ahead. You're going to let that cool down for at least 15 minutes. Assuming that we're going to go ahead and baking, you can take oven racks, put them in the center and the bottom of the oven. Okay, center and bottom. Put a roasting pan on the bottom rack. Fill it about halfway with warm water. Let's say an inch. Say an inch of water, all right? Turn your oven to 325 degrees. We're looking for a moist environment here. Remember, a lot of, if you've lived out in the country, you might have even seen fruitcake stoves that were made to go on top of pots of boiling water. They were like a big cabinet that went down on the pot and had shelves because we're basically talking about a steamed cake here. All right, so you've got that ready. All right, now we're going to make the dry portion of the batter. You're going to need 9 ounces, yes, by weight, 9 ounces of all-purpose flour, 1.5 teaspoons of kosher salt, 1 teaspoon of baking soda, 1 teaspoon of baking powder. And you're going to want to sift all that together, okay? And this is important because it's about bringing the batter together quickly. And aerated flour mixtures will come together quicker. Now, if you do not have a sifter, just buzz this up in your food processor. That will do a very, very good job of aerating the batter. Don't let it run all day, but a few pulses certainly isn't going to hurt anything. I still have a sifter, but if you don't, that is certainly one way of going. All right. Once you've got that done, you're going to bring that into the saucepan, and you're probably going to have to do it in a couple of doses or maybe 3 doses and stir that batter together as quickly as possible with like a big wooden spoon or a big rubber spatula. And you don't want to overmix this because the cake could get tough on you. So get that brought together as quickly as you can. And then you're going to work in eggs. You're going to have 2 large eggs standing by already broken. I actually go ahead and beat mine together because they incorporate easier that way. Room temperature, because they also incorporate easier that way. And work that into the batter, okay? And then the last thing that you're going to add is 3 ounces of toasted and chopped pecans. Fold those in at the end. If you want to use walnuts, you know what? That's fine. I live in Georgia. I use pecans. That's it for the batter. That's everything. Nice and easy. Now you're going to spoon that into a 10-inch nonstick loaf pan, okay? And bake for an hour. Or until the interior just hits 200 degrees on an instant read thermometer. You go beyond 200 degrees, you will have diminishing returns and things will get way too crispy on the outside. You don't want that. Take out of the oven to a cooling rack, trivet, whatever you have. And then while that's been baking, you're going to take about 1/4 cup or more of brandy or cognac, bourbon, whatever you want. Put it in a spritz bottle. Not a water gun, although that can be a lot of fun, but a spritz bottle. And as soon as that cake comes out and cools down just a little bit, spritz the entire top with brandy and then let it cool completely. Then when it's completely cool, and this is the traditional part, you wrap the cake in a few layers of cheesecloth. All right. And then you spray that with more brandy and then you put it in a tin of some type. Heck, to be real honest, you could just use a big Tupperware if you want, and stash it. And just tuck it away someplace at room temperature for a few days. Every 2 to 3 days, if you touch the cheesecloth and if it feels dry, you spritz it with more brandy. Now, ideally, it would take about 10 doses of the brandy or other booze before I would even think about opening this thing up and eating it. Some people actually make this right at the end of the harvest season, you know, beginning of autumn, and continue to spritz and spritz and spritz and spritz and spritz until the thing is basically a big old booze sponge. And I don't have a problem with that. But just know that, you know, you're probably going to have fewer kids eating it in that case. When it's done and cut, it's a fabulous treat, but it's also a very good breakfast item. Of course, you'd probably want to use the version that didn't have as much booze in it, but the booze does indeed act as a preservative. Mm-hmm. And I've seen this cake, if properly stored in a tin, to last months. Not that it'll actually last that long, because you're going to eat it.
Because you're going to eat it.
You're going to eat it.
Would you toast it and like spread some butter?
I put it in the toast. Yeah, put it in the toaster.
Yeah.
Absolutely put it in the toaster.
Yeah.
What can I say? It's not quite as good as the apple pie you have for breakfast, but it's pretty good.
True. True. All right.
That's it. That's free range fruitcake. And it's delicious.
Sounds delightful. All right. I think one of our last questions is from Susan Kohler Anderson. She wants some help with recipe ideas that can be made in advance and frozen for easy prep. They always seem to have unexpected guests are busy working and shopping during the holidays. So.
So like a little something to nosh on?
I think mostly just ways to be prepared for the Christmas and New Year's holidays.
Things that you can never have too much of around the holidays. Definitely stocks and broths. I would make a big batch of stock if I had the time to do that. I always make a standing rib roast for Christmas. I rub it down with peppercorns and kosher salt and slow roast that. And I dry age my own for about 2 to 3 weeks in an old refrigerator I've got out in the garage. So I have to source mine by December 1. I need to already pretty much have a lock on that standing rib roast. I usually do 5 bone. So you need to know where, if you're going to do a roast, you need to know where that's coming from. And you can even pre-buy it. Most butchers will keep hold of it for you. If you're really fortunate, they might actually do the dry aging for you, which would be an extra nice thing for them to do, but you're not going to find that in too many places. I serve a lot of spice nuts during the holiday, and that's, you know, a very, very, very easy recipe. Should I read that? You think I should give that recipe? See if you can Google Alton Brown spice nuts. God only knows what'll come up, but see if an actual recipe comes up, because that's a lot of ingredients to read. But I make spice nuts and keep them around for the holidays. And I also, you get it. So what?
Spice pecans.
Spice pecans. Do you have to put in the Alton Brown part or?
I would.
Alton Brown spice pecans. Of course you would. Hot toddy. I also keep, if I know people are coming, I'll make hot toddy mixtures. Mm-hmm. And you can definitely, I know, get that online. Alton Brown hot toddy will probably get you there. And I keep that refrigerated. And then I just put it in the crock pot when I know people are coming over. So it'll be nice and warm.
I would also say if you're into limoncello, do it.
Is limoncello really a Christmassy thing?
I think if it's not, I think it should be, because that's when citrus fruits are in season. It's a delightful cocktail.
Delightful. That's a big old punch in the head of alcohol.
Yeah. And once you make it, you can keep it in the freezer for eons.
Well, if you make it in the summertime even, or when you can get hold of good lemons and Meyer lemons. So I mean, it's basically a lemon syrup with vodka and it won't freeze.
It's a year round cocktail.
You've got issues, clearly.
I know. Well,
I drink eggnog and hot toddy in around Christmas, and you're throwing back limoncello.
I know. And Bailey's. My family's Bailey's, a big Bailey's really? Family. Mm-hmm.
I thought that's. I only drank that when I was a kid.
Are you trying to
as
be
soon
mean?
As soon as I hit 18, I laid off that stuff.
You're terrible.
Bailey's
You're
in what? You put that in coffee?
Ice. Morning coffee.
It's like all creamy, anything? Right? Is there actual dairy in that stuff? Because it looks all white
shelf
and dairy.
Stable, large. But.
Yeah, that scares me. I think it's more like Coffee Mate. It's like Coffee Mate,
like Coffee
brown
Mate.
Food coloring. Caramel.
You are obviously not
mate,
Irish.
And I mean, actually, I'm part Irish.
Really?
Booze. Yeah.
Sacrilegious.
No, it isn't.
A little bit.
Well, your people must be from Northern Ireland.
No.
No? Southern Ireland?
Yes.
Do you even know? Catalano, you're an Italian. How do you?
That's a
you
married
don't know any
name.
Of this.
That's a married name.
Okay.
And
I think that's all the time we have. By the time we talk to you again, Patty won't be here anymore. So next week, you'll be back to just hearing me, and things will go much, much smoother. So until then, America, remember, cook smart.